I will call this meeting of the Children and Families Finance and Policy Committee to order. It's been one of those days. The first order of business, members, is the approval of minutes. Representative Nelson, would you be willing to move the minutes from Wednesday, March 25th?
Yes, I have reviewed the minutes, and I would move them as written.
Thank you. Representative Nelson moves approval of Wednesday, March 25th minutes. Members, any corrections or additions, any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Right. The motion prevails, and the minutes from March 25th are adopted. And members, the first item that we have on our agenda today is the governor's fiscal year 2026-2027 supplemental budget, and we have with us the Minnesota Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Commissioner Tiki Brown, if you'll come up to the testifiers table, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed. Members, this is an informational hearing only, just for your information. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairs Katiza Witun and West, members of the Children and Families Committee. I'm Tiki Brown, Commissioner of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Thank you for having me here today. All right. DCYF was established to ensure that children are at the center of government, that a clear front door of access to services and programs is available, and that there are opportunities to better coordinate funding, programs, and outcomes for children and families. The governor's 2026 supplemental budget protects these investments the state has made throughout his administration in child care and early education, child maltreatment prevention, and increased assistance for families in need. It also makes important investments that pay for SNAP benefit costs imposed upon the state of Minnesota and our local governments by the federal government in the 2025 budget reconciliation bill, also known as HR 1. And it makes important investments that increase SNAP payment accuracy and improve SNAP administration, enhance program integrity and the Child Care Assistance Program, and funds legacy system improvements and human service delivery redesign. At the top right of every slide that describes a proposal, you'll see the page numbers in the DCYF summary document that you've received. And in total, this budget package includes $46.7 million in 26-27 and $212.3 million in 28 and 29. Just a note, 80% of this is in response to lost federal revenue and addressing impacts from HR 1. So on slide 3, you'll find this proposal on pages 2 through 4 in the summary document. This recommendation invests $10.1 million in fiscal year 27 and $194.1 million in 28 and 29 to address the new state share of SNAP benefit costs and enhance the oversight, training, and administration of SNAP to increase payment accuracy and minimize state fiscal obligations for SNAP benefits due to HR 1. First, this recommendation protects SNAP for Minnesotans by paying the federally required state share of benefits, which will begin in federal fiscal year 2028 and will be tied to payment error rates. This recommendation also adds capacity to DCYF to conduct real-time case reviews to prevent errors before they occur. And it strengthens training capacity for local agencies by increasing trainings available for new workers, adding new trainings for experienced workers, and expanding the certified train-the-trainer pilot statewide. These investments build on previous department efforts, leveraging one-time federal funding that we received in 2021 to bring in additional temporary staff for targeted case reviews and enhance technical assistance and training, which we are able to drive down the state's error rate to roughly 6%. On slide 4, continuing our investments to address federal changes to SNAP from HR 1, this recommendation supports the purchase and ongoing subscription costs for a consolidated policy and systems manual, an IT tool that will enable AI search functionality to increase payment accuracy and ease worker burden. Funding in this recommendation will also support the Maxis integration layer to enable connections to modern applications and tools, and a team of staff focused on addressing Maxis updates and projects. Additionally, this recommendation expands income verification technology and creates a new secure applicant portal to reduce eligibility errors and increase application processing time. And finally, this recommendation covers lost federal administrative reimbursements for state information technology systems, including lost federal support for Maxis in response to cuts to the funding that states receive from the federal government to administer SNAP. Slide 5 includes a number of provisions to enhance fraud prevention and detection for the Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP, using a multi-prong approach. This proposal is on pages 5 through 7 of the summary document. First, this proposal would increase the department's investigative capacity by adding a new team of investigators. This will allow for more proactive and unannounced site visits, in addition to the extensive work that the Office of Inspector General currently does to investigate tips, flags, and concerns. Second, the proposal would expand the department's ability to identify program integrity risks proactively and track investigations. It includes funding for infrastructure, including introducing a single case management system for investigations, and for staff to analyze new and future data sources integrated into our pipelines. This proposal also recognizes the important local role that local agencies play in program integrity and proposes to increase the Fraud Prevention Investigation, or FPI grant, that is available to counties and tribal nations that support increasing their capacity for program integrity work. And finally, this proposal would expand existing training on CCAP administration requirements to make it mandatory for providers receiving CCAP. It would also update the curriculum to focus on program integrity. This proposal on slide 8 of the summary document makes several budget neutral technical adjustments that has no net cost across the enterprise. It aligns funding for several programs, including food shelves and preschool assessments, to align with current DCYF responsibilities. One provision extends the ability of Hennepin and Ramsey counties to use the Minnesota African American Family Preservation and Child Welfare Disproportionality Act phase-in funding that they received in 2024. That phase-in funding currently ends June 30th of 2026. But the program, the phase-in program, runs to December 31st, 2026. And so that's the extension there. We have worked with DHS and Department of Education to develop this proposal, and they are fully supportive. Our next recommendation, addressing legacy systems, has three components. This proposal is on pages 9 through 11 of the summary document. First, this recommendation addresses Maxis inefficiencies, proposing $25 million in fiscal year 27 and $2.5 million per year ongoing that will support a phased execution of system enhancements aimed at easing the worker experience, improving usability, and moving towards a modernized platform for eligibility determination and casework. This investment could support several Maxis improvement efforts. Some of the ideas being generated include a web interface overlaying the Maxis green screens to provide a point-and-click navigation and improve worker experience, a new rules engine allowing quicker eligibility determinations, better accuracy, and improved ability to reflect updated policies rather than relying on error-prone manual workarounds, and an exploration of developing a new worker portal to improve case management. Second, this recommendation provides $2.7 million in one-time funding for a comprehensive study aimed at improving service delivery through technology modernization and alignment of technology systems across agencies and human services programs. And third, this recommendation funds positions across DCYF, MNIT, and DHS to sustain cross-agency technology modernization work. The work in this proposal will include significant consultation with those who use Maxis, including tribal nations and counties. On slide 8, our program integrity proposal. As you know, Minnesota is a state committed to helping people, and we're committed to providing services that improve the lives of Minnesotans. Fraud against public programs is unacceptable, and it's not a victimless crime. It harms the very same people that we are trying to help with these services. Since DCYF was established on July 1st of 2024, I have made establishing a culture of program integrity and compliance one of the cornerstones of our agency. This proposal on page 12 of the summary document provides funding needed for DCYF to coordinate the work with the statewide OIG established in the governor's supplemental budget. The governor's proposed statewide OIG will first conduct, review, and oversee investigations. Second, consult on the selection of and establish standards of the work of the agency inspector generals. And three, lead improved data sharing between agencies for improved detection and alerting of potentially fraudulent actors in programs that cross agency boundaries. Meanwhile, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families will retain current program integrity responsibilities and will act on issues identified by the statewide OIG. This proposal invests $465,000 in fiscal year 27 and $1.2 million per year ongoing to support five staff at the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. These staff will work in coordination with the State Office of Inspector General to facilitate data requests, data transfers, and investigatory collaboration within the State Office of Inspector General. Slide 9 is our human services redesign, which invests $2.5 million in fiscal year 27 and $1.3 million in fiscal years 28 and 29 to assess state and county roles for administering economic assistance, food support, child care programs, and provider licensing and fraud investigation functions. The goal of the study will be to evaluate the outcomes, effectiveness, efficiency, and costs associated with county-administered and state-administered human service models. The study will also engage with tribal social service agencies to understand and support their preferences for human service program administration. It will include close partnership and coordination with the Department of Human Services as we jointly assess the landscape of services provided by counties. This funding supports a vendor and five subject matter experts at DCYF to support a study of this magnitude and importance. And with that, I can close, and thank you for your time this afternoon, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. We can move on to member discussion and questions. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, and thank you for bringing forth some ideas. Did you say? I thought you said me.
I did. Oh. Yep. Sorry. I was not speaking loud enough into my mic.
Oh, thank you for bringing forth some suggestions and ideas. I particularly love the study to see how we should share this work with our county partners. I'm hearing from them here. I'm also hearing from them in human services that this some of the changes from HR1 and then just in general sort of the workload as it stands is difficult. And I think rather than just making unilateral decisions about how to do that, really using data to make those decisions makes a lot of sense. And so there's a similar proposal that I got to hear in human services, and I'm glad to see that that is a coordinated effort so we can try to figure out the best way to administer high quality services to Minnesotans without overburdening our county partners.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. I just have a question on couple questions on page 8 when it's talking about the technical funding adjustments. Is there any part of the budget that includes funding for the other 85 counties if there isn't any delays for the African Preservation Act that we passed to match what happened in Ramsey and Hennepin County with funding?
Commissioner. Oh,
thank you. Thank you, Chair. I don't believe there is any other funding in this proposal. Certainly, the only funding that we have available related to that particular legislation was for Hennepin and Ramsey County, related to the phase-in portion, which they'd like to extend. But there is no other funding that is associated for counties related to this legislation.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Follow-up? Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that follow-up. And that's concerning to the other 85 counties that there is no funding because that mandate hasn't changed, as I understand it, or hasn't been delayed. I don't see any delayed language in the proposal, so that's a big cost to the other 85 counties, and it was costly for Hennepin and Ramsey County and the other counties have the same concerns, and I think the administration needs to note that. I'm hearing from all the counties. On page 12, now that we have the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families, I'm wondering if you can explain what systems on page 12 are going to be in place, because we had an OIG in DHS also. And we had a tremendous amount of fraud, and we had Optum reports and the rest of the story. But I'm mostly curious on what systems are going to be put in place that are different from DHS, because we're moving staff, we moved programs, we created a new division, and we are adding to it. But we don't want to see the same problems. So I'm curious as to what you're doing that's going to prevent what did not happen in DHS.
Commissioner.
Thank you so much, Chair and members. This proposal on page 12 really references the statewide OIG effort and the need to really coordinate across the enterprise, across all of the departments, and really coordinate the data elements. So within the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, certainly we will maintain our systems. We've been working really hard, actually, over the Inspector General moved over to DCYF at the end of June, and we've been working really hard to consolidate data and pull together a data lake to access data in different ways than we have been able to before, which has allowed our team to act more swiftly and use data more accurately. My understanding is with the statewide OIG, they are hoping to utilize similar data systems and pipelines across the enterprise and not just in a siloed approach from, you know, individual agency to individual agency.
Any follow-up? Okay, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I was just curious, we heard in this committee House File 4125, which would have made some of the changes that are, we hear, cost the counties the most, or that they anticipate will cost the most, which is case review. And House File 4125 would have shifted some of those costs off the county, which unfortunately didn't pass through this committee. And so I just wanted to put that on the record in response to Representative Zeleznikar's questioning, because we did have a chance to shift some of those costs and help our counties out. And so I would love if this committee would be willing to do that, and I'm sure the counties would as well. I've had extensive conversations with them about this, and so I appreciate you being willing to take on that case review from that bill. And I know it's not part of the bill before us today, but thank you for continuing to be willing to help the counties and make this work. So from the Hennepin and Ramsey investments and then everything else, if we could hopefully get 4125 over the finish line, that would really help our counties out a lot. So thank you.
Right. Thank you for that, Representative Hansen. And I was having the same thought that is Representative Agbaje's bill that we had brought before the committee a few weeks ago. Representative Zeleznikar and Representative McDonald, you are here today. You and Representative Nadeau were not here when we were voting on that bill, and it did not pass along party lines. Representative Nelson had brought an amendment that was voted down, and unfortunately, yeah, that bill did contain blank appropriation for funding for the counties for MAFPA, and we were not able to reach agreement in this committee to move funding out of this committee. So if that's something that we are all willing to discuss, I think, you know, we still have a little bit of time before deadline to maybe move some proposals onto Ways and Means for consideration. Representative Altendorf, followed by Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Commissioner, for joining us today. I just had a question on the SNAP, and the estimates that I had was, you know, with our error rate, it was about $87 million. So 2028, 2029, you know, we're looking at $194 million, which is a huge increase. Do you think that we would have some time to reduce that error rate and then maybe save us dollars in that area?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair and members. That focus on the error rate is something that we've been doing, you know, for a long time. It's been a longstanding focus of the department. It's been a longstanding focus of the federal government that states pay attention to the error rate, and they've been held accountable in the past. Certainly this new HR1 bill changes the dynamic and shifts these incredible costs over to the state agency. So our team has continued to focus on different ways that they can work on different policies, enhanced trainings. There are a number of errors that counties see repeatedly that our team has provided extra training to help reduce those errors. So there's continuation of work that our team has been doing ongoing. The proposals that we have listed today, we think will help reduce the error rate even more, or at least help us maintain to the smallest degree possible that these costs would impact Minnesota.
Follow-up, Representative Alder.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, thank you, Commissioner, for that. I know, you know, there's just multiple things going on in that whole wheelhouse. So I know we've put some dollars towards modernization, how frustrating that is for the county. So, you know, I know there's this is very, very multiple problems going on here, but I appreciate that. And I just want to point that out that, you know, that really is an area that we could save some huge dollars for Minnesota. So thank you.
Representative Santamira.
Thank you. Mine is just a quick question. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I wasn't aware that some of the opioid dollars are coming over to DCYF. Can you just explain what those go towards? Thank you. And how, and I guess I'm seeing something about a child protection grant funding, and kind of how is that administered and what does it go towards? Thank you.
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair and members. I may need to phone a friend if any of my team members can help assist. I can give a high-level overview. I don't know that I have the specific details, but the current funding that we have, or the current funding that is at DHS, has a number of components and with a number of criteria, some of which is focused on child protection and others are other criteria that is DHS specific. So the I'm not seeing anybody come forward. So we will follow up with additional detail, I think. And no, we do have more detail. Who can explain a little bit more? Yeah. Please
feel free to introduce yourself for the record and respond to Representative Sensenmuir's question. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Marina Baleria. I am the budget director for DCYF. The opioid fund comes to DCYF per statute. We both have funding that's available for us to administer, and so that's what this proposal would do, would just clean up statute to clarify that the funding that it currently says the Department of Human Services, but they go to us to administer it. There's also, we receive, as the opioid fund goes to multiple things according to statute, and then a portion of it goes to us to do to administer the child protection grant. This is allocated based on a formula that's set out in statute, and we also we use it mainly for prevention of child protection issues related to opioid issue, you know, the opioid fund and other issues.
Representative Sensenmuir, any follow-up? Okay.
Thank you.
Next, I have Representative Nelson, Co-Chair, Vice Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I just thank you for being here today. And as I'm, you know, last session we worked quite a lot on SSIS, the cistern, just the modernization on that. And I was just, I'd had a overview of the Maxis system, and I saw that that might actually be worse than SSIS. I don't think we want to get into a bidding war on that, I'm glad to see funding for, you know, some modernization there, but you know, also hearing from those that are working with the system that you know, there's concerns that they don't just fix what's there. And I see that there is a little over $2.5 million for a, you know, system study. But are you thinking that this is going to be a new system and, you know, replacing what the current DOS system that, you know, that was introduced in 1989, I believe? Or is this maybe you can kind of give a little bit of an idea of what is being looked at with this study?
Commissioner Brown, and I just want to add on to this, Representative Nelson, because I also find it hard to keep all the different layers of software systems straight. And I know, I think that I understand it correctly and that Maxis is one of those that is shared between DCYF and DHS, and the DCYF portion is in relation to the SNAP benefits that we had seen a presentation in Ways and Means, I think, Chair West, that was jogging my mind. So go ahead.
Take it away.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and members. Indeed, MAXIS within DCYF covers SNAP and cash assistance programs, and there is a component that is related to some healthcare and other programs at DHS. It also has a child care and a number of other, I'll call it ancillary programs related. So it is a very large, complex system, and indeed, very, very old. I would place SSIS slightly above in terms of the fragility. It is a stable system, but it is a system that, due to the complexity and the number of programs and systems that operate within it and the years of layering, has made it very cumbersome to manage, and from a worker perspective, very, very difficult to operate within. And in fact, every time there is a federal policy change or a state policy change, it takes a number of years sometimes to put those efforts into place just due to the size and complexity of it. So we have been very thoughtful about the number of systems that we can modernize at the same time. And so that's certainly been part of the conversation. I think due to HR1 and certainly some of the concerns with some of the major policy changes, this has bumped it up more quickly than we would have expected. But we have been in a lot of conversations with counties about incremental changes, about things that we could do to help support the system without a full complete overhaul. We've also been looking at other states to see what successes they have had and what lessons we might learn. It appears that a complete brand new system all in one is one that we do not want to do. There, many states have failed and have wasted a lot of money by doing so. And so our approach is really focused on alleviating some of the short-term high pain points that counties and tribes are facing and that our staff is facing, while also putting in place a strategic, thoughtful plan that we can look to help address this over several years. And we'll continue to work through, I think, a process that will allow us to have a much better plan in place. But our plan this year is really HR1 focused, and how do we alleviate that immediate pain, and how do we reduce as much as possible the error rate so that we don't have a much less burden on our state and on our counties.
Vice Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that kind of that update and that answer on that. I think it's important that we do update this, and I think it's being that it is such an expansive program, I think that whether we want to call them silos or whatever, I think that's probably getting in line with HR1 and what is happening there on the federal level. I think it is probably the right approach, and I think that's kind of how SSIS was kind of worked at updating. It has more to do with than just out of home placement. That was kind of the area that we had focused on at first, but really kind of updating that and then being able to hopefully more simply update the rest of the system. And I know that it's for those that work with it and are good at it, I was kind of dizzying watching how quickly the individual could go through this, but I think she had like 25 years of experience with the system, and I think with Pine County, I think they said that it takes about 18 months to kind of understand the system, and the average person was staying in their job for about 3 years. And so, we've got somebody taking 18 months to kind of learn the system and then being somewhat proficient for 18 months and then taking a different job. Why it's, that's a lot of time spent on learning and not a whole lot of proficiency out of the end of it. I think definitely a need for updating a system. So I'm glad to see the study happening.
Thanks for that question, Representative Nelson. Representative Perez Vega. Oh, all right. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Brown, two questions. One based on the your number, I think it was six on your fraud, on your template there, the fraud enhancing prevention and detection. So question on that is that you're asking for $3.3 million for 1 year and $5.7 million. for 28-29. In the event that we are not able to come together as a conclusion, both parties, and pass this, what procedures are and what monies are you going to currently use to enhance and protect our taxpayer dollars to prevent any ongoing fraud?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair and members, for that question. So our office has been, I mentioned before that the Inspector General moved over to our office, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, June of 2025. And from the beginning, we have been enhancing our policies and our procedures, looking at the commissioner authority to ensure that we are utilizing every single authority available to ensure that we are going after any ability to address fraud. And we have also been able to, within that team, address and enhance some additional investigations. And so currently our team has been conducting over 150 enhanced investigations, and that will continue over the course. That's on top of their regular work. So that's some changes that we have made. What we would like to do with this funding is have that be an ongoing, more proactive effort. We were able to do that for a short period of time, but we need that team to conduct their regular work. And so we've been able to do, with our existing funding and our existing resources, enhancements to the work that we do. But this funding will allow us to do even better. I think as we have been working through and understanding the interest in a continuous improvement process, our team has been identifying additional improvements that we can make. And this proposal really reflects that. Our team is strong and is doing a good job, but we can definitely do more.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, the Inspector General was here a couple of times and did communicate with us some of the things that they're doing, and sounds good. Do you, in your proposal, you have, what is it, 4 or 8 or 13 new full-time employees? And then you, at I think 28, 29, are going to claw back some of those FTEs that you may not be necessary, therefore saving some money. Can you just expound on a little bit on that?
Oh, cool.
If and the reason I ask, Madam Chair, is because the Inspector General did say we need more people to investigate, to do these site visits, and this, in your proposal, you're asking for that. Again, it may not happen this year. We have no money. Well, we have a little bit of money, but we're going into a deficit in 2028-29. So I think this committee probably wants to know for sure, and you already mentioned, Commissioner, but other important steps, enhancements, as you said, that to make sure we avoid or prevent any fraud going forward. So the question is the full-time employees.
All right. And to the department, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thanks, Chair. I'm Ashley Reisenauer. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at DCYF. So the proposal includes 9.75 FTE in fiscal year 27, and it ramps up to 13 FTE in 28 and 29. Out of those, the six of them are directly related to increasing investigative capacity. In fact, it doubles DCYF's existing CCAP investigative capacity. Six of them are for expanding the data analytics team and our ability to use data and make it available within the department. And then an additional one is for increasing local capacity for program integrity investigations. It's for expanding those fraud prevention and investigative grants. And then we do have an additional one for implementing the fraud training for child care providers, that requirement.
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mm-hmm. I did read that the fraud training, is there going to be a requirement then for those centers that they have to sign off on that they took the training and they acknowledge it, and any repercussions if they don't take their training, any fees or penalties?
Ms. Reisenauer or Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'll take that one. So currently there is training available for, anti-fraud training available for providers, but it isn't mandatory. And so this would make it mandatory and have the ability to ensure that folks are, that we have the ability to track it. I don't believe that we have discussed any sanctions of any sort if they were not to take that training, but that's certainly something we'd be willing to discuss and have a conversation on.
Representative McDonald?
Madam Chair, thank you. I think, Commissioner Brown, that would be a very good component of your bill, that there's a repercussion, there's a penalty, there's monies withheld if you don't take this training. I think that's important. I think you probably would agree it's important. That's why it's in your proposal. So I would support that for sure. And then I don't want to monopolize the meeting. I did have a question on the Maxis, but one last question regarding the fraud prevention procedures that you're proposing. And that is there any monies that you identified that were fraudulent in the past year that the news uncovered that you're able to continue to use to prevent fraud in some of your proposals? Does that make sense?
Perhaps.
Was there any money savings, I guess, would be a good
question. Like a recapture of funds?
Correct. Is that, yeah.
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair members. I don't have that available. It's a good question. I would have to get back to you on that. That's not something I have available. But it's a good question. I will say that without any information around a recapture and what that would look like, and also knowing that investigations take multiple months and sometimes years, it's a harder question for me to answer, but we can certainly get back to you on that. We have been able to allocate resources to improve our technology, for example, and improve our capabilities to reduce silos and enhance the data elements that our team has access to, which has increased their ability to respond more quickly to anomalies within data points. And so we've been able to do adjustments within our existing system as far as we're able, and also redirect additional staff for short periods of time. Beyond that, I'll get back to you on any recaptures and what that might look like.
All done.
I suppose. Do we have any? Is there other members' question? Are we moving on to the next?
I was actually going to follow up on one of your questions, if that's okay. And this may be to Ms. Reisenauer or you, Commissioner Brown. The Representative McDonald had asked about this. Well, it looks like a total of $9 million investment over the next 2 to 3 years for enhancing fraud prevention and detection. And then, Commissioner Brown, you had mentioned being able to track that training. Is there a segment of that $9 million then that is like already kind of being imagined to be set aside for any technological changes that may need to be made? Or is that something that the department feels that there wouldn't be a cost for?
Yeah, thanks. The proposal does include some resources for a tracking mechanism and for systems updates to do that kind of tracking.
Okay, so that's within the $9 million. Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative McDonald, if you've got another question, there's nobody else on
the
list.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. That was awfully kind of you. The next question, Commissioner, is regarding the Maxis. I noticed that you have some monies that are going to be transferred over from DHS to Children's and Families, which is a good thing. I think we did that last time as well, or last year. So there's $832 million transferred from DHS to Children's and Families, and another one that shifts $320 million from DHS to DCYF, and another one for $381,000. So this is page six, and here's why I asked that. Thank you, Senator Mira. Appreciate that. I can always be corrected. I'm fine by that. And anyway, in 2023, the state legislature passed a funding for, I think it was around $230 to $250 million to DHS for improving our IT, including Maxis. And according to what I've heard from those who are on the health committee, that they don't know where that money is. It never went to fix Maxis. And we know Maxis is a big problem in our counties. Is there a way to, for your committee, your department, Commissioner Brown, to force, if you will, DHS to find that $250 million that we all voted on to fix Maxis, to transfer it over to your account, your department, for fixing Maxis? And that's, sure. I guess that's my last question.
Yep, I think that's a valid question. And if you need assistance from the legislature in order to force DHS to find where those monies are and shift them over to DCYF to be used for other purposes, we'd love to talk about that. Commissioner Brown.
Committee members and Chair, thank you so much. I believe you might be referencing the SDT fund, which stands for the
Service Delivery Transformation.
Thank you. It does not easily roll off the tongue. Service Delivery Transformation Fund. And in fact, a certain portion of funding did transfer over to DCYF, and a portion of funding did remain at DHS. We do have a breakdown of the funding that did transfer over to DCYF. And if I may, I would ask Ashley, if I can get your name.
Ms. Reisenauer.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. So a portion of the funding did transfer to DCYF associated with the systems for which DCYF is a lead agency, which includes MAXIS. So a portion of that funding that was for the MAXIS notices, which was, I think, a state share of about $3.8 million, did transfer over to DCYF to continue some of that work. And the work is ongoing and active.
Any follow-up on that, Representative McDonald?
Chair, do we want to know just maybe further that $3.8 million, how is that, is it enhancing? Is it making a little more improvements? MAXIS is broken. It's what, 1992 or 89? To put any more money in it seems futile. But what's that $8.2 million? What is that really going to do to MAXIS and help all of our county folks that are struggling with this? Sure.
Commissioner Brown.
Sure, I can speak to that as well, Chair and members. The specific project that was the funding was transferred over to was around MAXIS notices. This has been a long-standing pain point for counties and clients who receive notices on all programs related to MAXIS. I believe the specific issue is around readability, understanding the notices. They're complex. They may not. There's some timeliness issues, and so it's been, I would say, an over 10-year issue. And so this funding, I think, is critical to ensure that and I would say in general, it's critical to continue to maintain some of the work that is existing within MAXIS while we work to improve and enhance. So this is one of those projects. This project has been, is working on currently. We had a pilot project that our team was working on to work with a couple counties to test out and see if it would work. And some of the work, I believe this committee has heard about the integration layer that our team has also been putting in place, and indeed there's funding in this proposal to continue the work of the integration layer. Because this MAXIS is an old system, I'll just call it, there is a need for an enhancement that will allow for data sharing to occur more easily between more modern solutions. And this integration layer that we're putting in place will allow for a modern solution to enhance our ability to more easily communicate with clients and have county workers easily be able to share information with clients. Right now, it's pretty old and clunky.
Thanks for that.
Well, Madam Chair, just that. Thank you, Commissioner Brown. That's very well said. I mean, as a committee, we have to think putting that kind of money into an old system, and this isn't any one person's fault. It's all of us, I guess, Republicans, Democrats, agencies, putting, was it $8.2 million into that MAXIS, and it's still broken. I mean, talk about insanity. If we can at least, as a legislature, and Representative XP, when we were talking before the meeting started, that we can hopefully get something done this year, if not a bonding bill. But if we can get anything done, it'd be fixing MAXIS, which I know, Madam Chair, is your priority as well. And that means throwing money on it. But you hate to throw the old saying, right? Good money against bad money. And that's what MAXIS is. And instead of fixing the problem, DHS, for the $250 million that you guys, as the majority, gave them graciously, and I think I hope I voted for it, they didn't even fix it. And they don't even know where the money is. Well, we know 8.2 went to DHS, and they're doing something about it. Or not DHS, DCYF. That's all I got to say about it. Let's fix this before we adjourn. Thank you.
Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to talk about what I think we haven't talked about yet here is recognizing how much HR1 costs us. You know, I was looking up the tax breaks that the average person would get. You know, if you're making under, let's say, $100,000 a year, it's, you know, somewhere between $300 to $600 or $1,500 to $1,800, depending on which analysis you read. But if we're on that lower end, I mean, we're talking about people who really, really are struggling to make ends meet, seeing less than a dollar a day on a tax break, you know, that this bill brought forward. And in comparison, if you make $1 million or more a year, you're looking at about $90,000 in tax breaks a year, which is about $250 a day, $246 to be exact. And if you make $5 million or more, your tax breaks look like about $300,000, which is $821 a day in tax breaks that HR 1 is costing us. That's where this money's going, so that we can make up this cost on this benefit cost share and many other things. So I wanted to make sure that we know that, you know, this HR 1 made sure that the richest 1% of this country will benefit more than the bottom 80%. And this is the spreadsheet of, like, what it looks like to absorb that cost. And that sucks. It's really hard. So I appreciate you and the governor's office for meeting the moment as best we can. I'm sorry we're here. We shouldn't have to be doing this. This is awful, because I just think about all the things that we could put that money towards, and families who need it, and just other things that it could all balance out to be. It could be different. And I wish we lived in that timeline and that reality instead of this one. So thank you again for just doing what you can with what you have, and I appreciate it. Thanks.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Brown, it looks like through the governor's proposal, the governor's attempting to take the issue of CCAP fraud and the Office of the Inspector General seriously, which is something that on this side of the committee tables we've also been advocating for. We've had a number of bills that we've attempted to push forward that would address these issues as well. Now, I'm looking through the proposal and I'm seeing that it's a lot of hiring more people to do. You know, you said you had 150 intensive investigations, like enhanced investigations. That's what you said there. I got it. I get there eventually. So these enhanced investigations, I understand the concept of needing more people to look at these investigations. My question to you is there some policy, or are we going to have them do the exact same thing, or is it just we need more people looking at the issue, or were people not looking in the right place with regard to this fraud that the governor is attempting to do something about, which is what we are entirely in favor of as well?
Commissioner Brown.
Chair and members, thank you for that question. Our existing structure and the way that we have our staffing system is really follow the law and how it's laid out, right? It's to follow the federal and state law and also to respond to tips and to, you know, do the annual visits and conduct investigations. That is the standard practice and what our team has been doing and continues to do so. What we believe is necessary and would be helpful is more proactive approaches and more unannounced visits. That would allow us to capture and, quite frankly, keep folks on their toes. More unannounced visits and ways in which patterns may be disrupted would allow us to really capture things that maybe we haven't in the past, or would allow folks to just be more accountable to the laws and regulations that are currently in place. We also have a component here that is really looking at our some additional system enhancement. We've done a lot already that I mentioned, but our case management system that's been in place, I think, since 2019 or so, needs some extra enhancement. So there are some additional things that our team can see that would be extra support and would allow some extra efficiency in the work that they're doing.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Brown. I appreciate the answer, and I hope that as a Minnesota House of Representatives, we can, as a body, take this issue of fraud seriously, and the issue of fraud in the child care assistance program as well. So I appreciate the governor's recommendations. I appreciate that he is looking at this with an eye of seriousness, and I hope that others in this committee and in this state Minnesota House of Representatives take it seriously as well.
Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions, and I'll just go in the order in which we basically talked about them here. So we talked about MAFPA and the case review portion of it is the funding for case review is not in this budget. Is the department ready to take on case review when MAFPA is implemented January of this coming year?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, chairs and members. You're right. The only proposal that we have in place right now is an extension. We have been working extensively in our phase-in process with Hennepin and Ramsey and with a number of committee members that we have in place to get every single county ready as the phase-in process ends. And we have been working also to develop a number of solutions to look at what does case review look like for the department, and we'll be ready as the legislation currently stands to implement as necessary.
Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So say the legislature acts and says the department will take this on because the counties clearly are not ready for it. They have said that very clearly. If we were to say, okay, here, department, take on all the case reviews for the state, please. They're begging for it, and we think that's the best way forward. Would you be ready in January?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, chairs. If the department were to take on all of the case reviews that are currently the responsibility of the counties, that would require a number of changes that we would need to make at the department, including staffing restructure, organizational restructure. This is not something that our team currently does, and we would need to determine what would be necessary in order to take that on fully.
Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Which is exactly the problem every single county around the state has, is they don't have a massive staff, and they're going to have to deal with something that apparently we aren't ready to implement, and even the task force doesn't have a clear path forward. Which is why I would hope we would take a serious look at giving the counties time to get the staff, give the task force time to really create a solid plan and implement it in a way that actually works, because as it stands right now, it is going to not go well, to say the least. On income verification for SNAP, so my question is, well, one, what do you do right now? And the reason for that question is, most of these financial institutions already do, like, we see income verification all over in our lives, and you have the Min Benefits online portal right now, and you mentioned doing income verification and a secure portal. Well, on that portal, you have people enter in their Social Security number and all sorts of other things. So is the portal not secure now, or why isn't there income verification built into the system that already exists?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, chairs. I believe you might be referencing the deed coordination and expanding access to deed data in terms of the income verification. So the team, we currently have an interagency agreement with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and what we are seeking to do is enhance that tool and enhance our ability for greater access and greater support.
Chair West.
This might just be a nod. So the primary purpose is just getting access to that unemployment data from deed?
Commissioner Brown.
Correct. Enhanced data. I believe there's already some, but it needs to be much more expanded.
Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Now on to the fraud issue, which I'm glad to see the governor's office taking it seriously. I share my concerns about the rest of the governor's party taking it seriously, but it's good to see that that is in here. Now, on the fraud training for the providers, you mentioned needing money for that, but then it sounds like it's CCAP compliance training, more or less, just teaching people how to properly do that. It sounds like that already exists and that's already being done. What is costing money exactly on this training?
Ms. Reisenauer or Commissioner Brown?
We're phoning a friend.
Right.
For more details.
All right. Feel free to approach the table and introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Barti Wahi, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Early Childhood. could the question was, Chair West, could you repeat the question, Chair West?
Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to, yeah. So it sounds like this fraud prevention training for providers is essentially CCAP compliance training to show providers how to properly do that. It sounds like that already exists from what I heard earlier, and it makes sense that it would already exist. What if the training already exists, why is more money required to do the training?
Assistant Commissioner.
Madam Chair. Chair West. So the proposal that you all see in front of you is actually creates a more enhanced mandatory training for child care providers who receive CCAP. So there is currently a training, and providers do attest to having reviewed that and other information. But this training is an enhanced training that would be more interactive, right? That would allow live in-person question and answer, I think with the purpose of both to reduce, like, errors and mistakes, which can sometimes happen with complicated programs, but I think also to really ensure that people fully understand the requirements of the program.
Chair West.
Okay, so sounds like it's mandatory, and it's a whole new training after what's done, is my understanding. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems making it mandatory makes a lot of sense. One thing we've learned in our discussions this year is the difference between program integrity visit and a licensing visit, and that the licensors have an optional fraud checklist they can go through, or something that was mentioned by the Office of Inspector General. I think a great path would be sure making that training mandatory, but having the fraud portion of a inspection be mandatory seems like it also would be a good thing to make mandatory. For these fraud investigations, well, the news covered them, and then we heard that from the department that they were investigating a few of them, that some were under investigation that were brought up. You're talking about doubling the number of inspectors, which, again, I think you'll find a lot of support for that. Is there any savings being booked for doubling the inspectors? One would hope that that leads to more recovery of funds. Is the governor booking any savings in this budget?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, chairs. Savings is not something that I have any data on. We can certainly have additional conversation around that. To be honest, our focus has been increasing the number of staff to really have this proactive focus on reaching as many providers as possible and addressing any tips and enhanced data. And be happy to have conversations about what sort of savings around sort of a, I guess, return on investment approach would be interesting.
Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I think everybody would be very interested in hearing, you know, if there's money, politicians get very interested. So
fair.
If there's money that can be recovered. And I like you mentioned the unannounced visits. That's something that we had in the House GOP anti-fraud bill of we need to be more proactive in these unannounced visits. I think we can move forward in a way on some of these elements to really get a hold of the system. But the problem is, as I think the governor's budget points out, it's not a proactive system. There isn't much staff. There's a lot of money going out, but not a lot of accountability. And that has become a multi-billion dollar issue for the state. So this part of it, it's good to see, and we'll see what the money situation looks like, but I think we share some of the same goals with the governor's office, and hopefully we can find some positive movement on these anti-fraud measures.
I think we all have widespread support for preventing fraud, Chair West. And of course, we've been taking incremental action year by year since we were initially on the committee together back in 2019. So with that, I would like to express my gratitude to the commissioner and the entire team at DCYF for your work on this. And next, we will have a policy bill from the Department of Human Services. Just as a general reminder, the Office of the Inspector General that's housed in DHS also operates as the OIG for DHS. DCYF, thank you. All right. Representative Hicks, go ahead and get settled. And then we also have Ms. Didion from the Office of the Inspector General at DHS. We're just hearing this bill informationally as well, members, but it is formally in our possession. It is House File 4525 from Representative Hicks. Go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you so much, Chair and members. This is the OIG General Policy Bill. I want to be really clear, this is policy only. So we are just going to be talking about the components that are policy. In your packets, you have a document from the department that outlines the different policies and provides a general overview of the policies included in the bill. And then there's also a larger document that works or walks through the proposal title and the specific sections, along with a copy of the bill. Happy to walk through each or have the Inspector General legislative folks walk through each section, and we can go from there.
Wonderful. Feel free to introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you and Chair West members for hearing this bill today. It is the DHS Office of Inspector General policy bill. And I just wanted to correct, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families does have their own Office of Inspector General. However, the DHS Office of Inspector General is still responsible for the background studies for programs overseen by DCYF. And this is pretty similar to how we handle background studies for a few other departments, notably the Department of Health.
Thank you for that point of clarification.
We have two proposals related to background studies for DCYF programs in our policy bill this year. And I will note that I had an error on my bill index. It did not highlight one of the sections for the child and adult foster care and adult day services requiring new fingerprint-based studies in NET Study 2.0. That is sections 15, 22, and 34. I don't think I have the 34 noted on that bill index, so I just wanted to make sure folks saw that. This one is simply migrating existing background studies from a legacy NET study system, which was what the department used to process background studies prior to implementing the NET Study 2.0 system a bit over a decade ago. And so these studies for child and adult foster care and adult day services have a county component, and DHS isn't able to manually or able to move the studies on our own, so we need these instructions. This doesn't require new or duplicative studies. This is simply moving studies from the legacy system into NS2. These are kind of a hanger-on that have not been fully transferred into the new system. And then the other proposal related to Department of Children, Youth, and Families programs is IG-16, which is our background studies federal compliance package. Section 16 relates to the transferability of child foster care background studies. Current law allows them to be transferred across all licensed programs, but these studies do not have the same requirements. Federal law requires a higher level for these studies. So this makes that change for child foster care studies. And then section 17 makes a correction to language that was put in place in 2025 related to supervision for child care background studies. And so this language comes into alignment with federal requirements by clarifying that certain child care background study subjects cannot work under supervision while their study is in process. And that is the sections related to this committee. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that walkthrough. Any discussion or questions, members? Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation.
On the section 17, where it's clarifying that a child care worker can't work while it's in process, I understand that because that's the standard in healthcare too. You can't care for seniors or care for disabled people until you've passed the background study. So I'm curious as to if child care centers were letting people work before that was done. They've hired them and they're in the process. Is this implying that they were allowed to work without the background study back?
Director Didion.
Madam Chair, Representative Zalesnikar, no. Previously, I believe that they were allowed to work under supervision while the study was in process, so this removes that option. They were not able to have independent direct contact with kids in the program prior to their background study clearing.
Representative Zalesnikar, any follow-up? Any other discussion members? Right. Just for clarification, it's my understanding that any further action that will be taken on this bill would be taken in Chair Noren and Chair Schumacher's committee. And we have all the documents for review, and we'll follow up with further questions. Thank you. All right. Members, that is all that we have on our agenda for today. And our next meeting will be Tuesday, April 14th, where Chair West will have the gavel. And we are now adjourned.